Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the Indian Lake region has experienced remarkable resilience from the tornado that ripped through the area 3 weeks ago, but more help will be needed for a full recovery and rebuild. Plus, if it seems these kinds of big storms are becoming common in Ohio, it's not just your imagination. Research shows Tornado Alley is shifting eastward. We'll talk about why scientists say we could be in for more frequent and intense storms like the ones we experienced last month. And of course, we have another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen to finish up the week. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, April 5th, 2024. This is a really good story to know, to bring up first thing as you're just getting up and ready to head to work. A new study has found that tough work schedules for young adults can negatively affect their health decades later. Researchers discovered that young adults who work outside of the normal 9-to-5 were more likely to have sleep issues and symptoms of depression once they reach their 50s. Following an analysis of a long-term study that tracked the health of more than 7,000 people in the U.S. for more than 30 years, research showed that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s rarely have a typical 9-to-5 work schedule. People with work patterns involving any degree of volatility and variability were more likely to have fewer hours of sleep per day, lower sleep quality, lower physical and mental functions, and a higher likelihood of reporting poor health and depressive symptoms at the age of 50 than those with stable standard work schedules. This is according to the lead researcher at NYU, New York University, that conducted this study. Wow. So if you are waking up this morning and heading to work with that typical 9-to-5, good for you. If not, just be prepared because later in life, you may run into issues. Kind of interesting. Make of that what you will. This is big news among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The Wood County Courthouse, once again, home to eggs laid by a pair of peregrine falcons. For the past 14 years, this is the 14th year in a row that the pair have laid eggs in the tower of the Wood County Courthouse in Bowling Green. They actually have a camera on the nest, and they have spotted one egg that has already been laid. There may be more. Last year, the pair of falcons laid 4 eggs in total, and two chicks hatched in May. So you hope that there will be more eggs because there's about a 50-50 chance of them being viable. So the more eggs, obviously, the more chicks. They will have more baby birds. Peregrine falcons, the fastest birds in the world. They can fly at a diving speed of 186 miles an hour. That is amazing. So, really cool. So, it looks like more peregrine falcons in Bowling Green. I saw this item on the Newswire among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Apparently, the discount chain 99 Cents Only is going out of business, closing all of their stores. In a statement released yesterday, the company said that the last several years have presented challenges, including the impact of COVID and shifting consumer demand. The 99 cents only stores were founded in 1982. They are primarily out west. I don't know that we have any 99 cent only stores in our area. Not like we need them. We have plenty of dollar stores, but they're primarily in California, Arizona, Nevada, Texas. It says here liquidation sales are set to begin today at all 371 locations of the chain. And I'm wondering, what does a liquidation sale look like at a dollar store? I mean, you can only discount the stuff so much. And if you can't draw customers in when your prices are 99 cents only, are they really going to come in if you discount it down to 49 cents or 39 cents? I mean, is that enough to draw people in? If you can't bring them in at 99 cents, I'm not. Just close the stores and donate everything to Goodwill. You know, that's what you. let's see. This is another one of those stories that kind of made me raise my eyebrow. The Coast Guard is conducting a search in the area between Cuba and the Bahamas for a 20-year-old man who allegedly jumped off of a cruise ship. He jumped off a cruise ship. Witnesses reported that the man jumped from an upper deck of the Liberty of the Seas cruise ship. And he jumped while his father and brother were watching. The only question that I have is, who did he ask to hold his beer? You know, I'm guessing that this is some sort of story that started with the words, "Hold my beer." The search is ongoing, it says. I don't know. I mean, it may be a very tragic story, and I don't mean to make fun, but I'm just, I mean, his brother and his father were there while he jumped off the cruise ship in the middle of the ocean. I'm guessing that they're hold my beer. Speaking of the Coast Guard, this I thought was really interesting. The Coast Guard is bringing in extra staff to monitor Lake Erie during the total eclipse on Monday. It's expected to bring thousands of visitors, not only to Ohio, but also to the Great Lakes region in general. And a marine safety information bulletin has been released for Lake Erie boaters, which says the Coast Guard has extra patrols, extra boats, extra helicopters even will be brought in for the day. And I hadn't really thought about that. One of the big things that everybody's been talking about with the eclipse is the amount of traffic that will be, eclipse will generate, the amount of extra traffic. Way to avoid the traffic is to, go out on Lake Erie. But there's probably going to be a lot of extra traffic on the water as well. The Coast Guard bulletin states that the biggest threat to boaters is rapid changes in light, which can affect spatial perception and visibility. So they're concerned about the number of boats and people not being able to see the boats and all of that. So anyway, just kind of interesting if you were planning on heading out to the lake for the eclipse. And by the way, speaking of the eclipse and visibility, have you heard about this? They say on Monday you should plan to wear red and green clothes. I guess the eclipse, depending on how you dress, you can get a really interesting effect, and it is a scientific phenomenon. The darkening of the sky will cause red and yellow colors to fade faster than greens and blues. So anyone who is wearing a mixture of green and red will see the green look a lot brighter and the red look a lot darker. And the contrast will be quite dramatic, apparently. Experts say people will see the biggest effect if large groups dress in contrasting colors. So if you are planning on viewing the eclipse within a large group of people, then maybe you want to plan out your wardrobe accordingly. Kind of interesting there. So there you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly cloudy today, a high in the mid-40s, partly cloudy tonight, a low around 30. City of Findlay offices will be closed on Monday due to the total solar eclipse. The mayor's office will still be accessible that day. We have their phone number and email in the story on our website. The Humane Society and SPCA of Hancock County is reminding people to keep a close eye on their pets on the day of the eclipse.
be good to kind of treat the eclipse like the 4th of July. The 4th of July is one of the busiest times of the year for your pets to get lost. So make sure you have a clear picture of your pet. Keep your pets indoors. You might want to play music just because of the amount of traffic we're supposed to get.
Natalie Reffitt with the Humane Society says to keep your pets leashed, tagged, and indoors if you can, and make sure you have current pictures of your pet if they do get lost. Get more in the story on our website. University of Findlay physics professor Stephen Wild is very excited about the upcoming eclipse.
I think all people share a common wonder of the stars and of space. And this is one of those shared experiences that as people we all can kind of experience together.
The University of Findlay's Newhard Planetarium previously hosted an event to talk about the science behind the total solar eclipse coming up on Monday and give people an idea on what to expect on that day. Professor Wild says Findlay is within the path of totality and the total eclipse will start a little after 3:10 p.m. and last for about 3 minutes and 40 seconds. This year marks the first spring with marijuana being legalized in Ohio. What does that mean for outdoor events?
The state is developing rules and licensing applications for dispensaries, growers, and processors. State lawmakers are in disagreement over the specifics, but have made clear there will be no smoking marijuana in enclosed areas open to the public. This includes locations that allow smoking tobacco, such as restaurant and bar patios where alcohol is served.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
If you've been following the story in the aftermath of last month's tornadoes that ripped through the Indian Lake region, it is remarkable, really, the resilience that that area has shown in recovering over the course of just 3 weeks. But they are far from done. Much more help will be needed for a full recovery and rebuild. And State Representative John Cross is with us on the line this morning with an update on where things stand. I know you have been very much involved in the recovery and rebuild. It is amazing to see in just 3 weeks how far they've come and how quickly they have reopened for business there.
Yeah. Good morning, Chris. Yes, I've heard several different hashtag lines. One of them is Indian Lake Strong, and they have certainly rallied together as a family over there. And if you saw how bad it was day one versus today, it is they have moved mountains, so to speak. However, it is still a ways to go to get Indian Lake back to where it was. But I'm confident we can help them get there, and that's why we're pleased to have the governor back at Indian Lake a couple days ago. We were down there with him to get an update, talking to business leaders, community leaders, just trying to understand the picture of what we need to do to move forward.
Just the fact that they are functioning is so important, because I know one of the concerns in the immediate aftermath was the fact that this is an area that relies so heavily on tourism, and we're right. Coming into the spring and summer season, but they are, even for the eclipse on Monday, saying, please come to the state park campground, come free, patronize the businesses and so on that are open.
Yeah.
That really is remarkable.
Yeah, that's a great message. That's right. The governor reiterated that message this week, that Indian Lake is open for business, and we're thankful to ODNR to get the lake back open. They shut the lake down just so they could get a lot of the debris out of the waters of the lake. They put a couple no-wake zones towards the areas where they think there's a lot of debris. They did find the statue of Mary over there broken apart. So there's a lot of things that they're recovering out of the lake. We'll still continue to work on that. But We also have some things that, you know, we want to kind of talk about and announce too. Obviously, FEMA has been here and they are assessing the situation. The downside of FEMA and the Federal Emergency Management Agency is that it takes a very long time to assess whether
right.
federal funding can be there or not. So the governor, and I really hate to speak for all legislators, but I'm pretty confident my colleagues will be supportive. I think the state needs to step up and do its part to help. We are in a financial position to do so. So we are assessing how much money. We have a controlling board committee meeting on April 15th. Pretty confident we'll have some funds that we'll be able to release to support the local governments. If you look at Lakeview, Russell's Point, Lakeview got destroyed. The whole business district got destroyed.
Yeah.
The city council chambers got destroyed. Lakeview is really hurting financially, and so we have to go in there and I think help these local governments get back on their feet. So we're going to look at that. We're also looking at funding to help a lot of displaced families. There were up to 500 homes, and we've assessed at a base minimum 250 families or 250 homes that were destroyed, and the number could go up to 500. And there are people who are living, you know, in hotels an hour away trying to get their kids to school. Mm-hmm. We're trying to work to help them because at Indian Lake, there is no hotels. There's not a lot of accommodations.
Right.
People are making their Airbnbs accessible, but we have to find temporary housing solutions for these folks.
Yeah, and even if there were hotels and you know temporary accommodations, they to the extent that there are those, they were impacted as well. So only of limited right. benefit with respect to that. When you talk about emergency funding coming from the state, how much of that is from the state itself, and how much of it would be considered like advancements on future federal help?
Well, we don't know how much federal money, if any, we will get. So
yeah.
we're willing to put our state dollars out there. I mean, I right now, I hate to say a number because I don't know if that number is locked in, but, mm-hmm. but, you know, you're looking at several million dollars that we would execute from the state. And the way I see it is I have no problem doing that because we have emergency funds that we hold at the state for bad situations like this. And so I think we certainly need to use that. If we get reimbursed from FEMA, great. If we don't, I think we just got to do what we got to do to take care of our people. That's
yeah.
why state government is here, and that's what we got to do. But now on April 19th, I've been informed, though, that the SBA, the U.S. Small Business Administration, should have a declaration by April 19th, and that would release $14 million of federal SBA funding for small businesses. We not only do we have to help people get back into a home or mm-hmm. lifestyle, a lot of businesses are devastated, even though they may have insurance. I probably the best one that could tell this to anybody, someone who has lost their house and is fighting insurance.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be businesses that are not going to be fully funded. And so we're going to try to find some gap funding for businesses to help get them back on their feet. And like you said, it's seasonal. I mean, you make your most money basically Memorial Day to Labor Day. And so that's important to help our businesses get back on their feet.
Obviously, that is going to be one of the priorities in the remaining term that you have
sure.
In office, making sure that, you know, securing that funding and making sure that it gets to those who need it. Let's talk a little bit about that, because obviously you have several months yet to go before your term ends in the state legislature. What are some of the other priorities that you have identified for the remaining time you have in office?
Well, certainly we want to get the capital budget completed. The Senate is working on their side of the capital budget, but what's important in that capital budget is a $5 million line item for Indian Lake for dredging. And so dredging is important, but probably even more important now.
More so now, yeah.
More so now. So that's important. You know, we, in addition to the capital, well, to be clear, it was called the one-time strategic funding.
Mm-hmm.
We will have an additional capital budget in addition to the one-time strategic funding. So we'll look at some more projects we can be of help here in the Hancock County area. We've got, some final touches that we have to do on the marijuana laws that were passed to provide some clarity on that for law enforcement and all those that have to go through the process of understanding how issue two gets rolled out. So we'll be working on that. And then there are, you know, 69 bills, House bills sitting in the Senate, and 30 some Senate bills sitting in the House. So as a legislative leader, you know, we've got a lot of bills that we've got to basically move. And so we're looking at some priority bills, both from the Senate and the House, that we got to get done. Personally, I don't have any. I've got a couple bills I'm looking at, some school bus safety legislation, a couple other things we're looking at. But basically, I think what we're trying to do is be productive here in the next 2 months before summer break, and then when we come back in the fall, to try to get as many of these bills between the House and the Senate concluded to wrap up the General Assembly. So, you know, a lot of the big things were done, but again, next week is the governor's State of the State address. So we're looking forward to hosting the governor and the in the chamber to discuss, to hear him out, see where his priorities are moving forward, and, you know, just trying to wrap up the legislative year. And we're looking forward to the next 9 months. I'm sure it's going to go quickly, but we're going to work very hard and do our best for the district, and then make sure that we have a really good transition. I'm pretty confident Ty Matthews will go on to win his race in November, and we'll do a great job to make sure that he is fully briefed on the district and get him ready and prepared to take over, and I know he'll do a great job.
Lot to do in the remaining 9 months or so. Again, State Representative John Cross with us this morning with an update on recovery in the Indian Lake region after last month's tornado and the priorities moving forward. And John, thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thank you.
Well, it's been less than a month since a series of tornadoes ripped through northwest and west central Ohio, and just this past week, we were on the alert again for another line of threatening storms that ended up just missing us, thank goodness. But if it seems odd that Ohio appears to be in the path of so many tornadoes and potential tornadoes lately, it is not just your imagination. Scientists say that the region of the country known as Tornado Alley is actually gradually moving eastward. WTOL 11 Chief Meteorologist Chris Vickers is with us once again this morning. So traditionally, we know Tornado Alley refers to mostly the lower plains states centered around Oklahoma, northeastern Texas. So let's step back a little bit. Why has that area historically been so active for tornadoes?
Right. Well, good morning, and thanks for having me along again this morning, Chris. I think it all stems back to the movie Twister, right? We've seen that one.
Right.
Where do they go storm chasing? They go to Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas, where many of us grew up understanding and thinking and believing that the highest likelihood of tornadoes was specifically designated for that portion of the country. Now, I'll be clear about this one. That still, for many respects and scientifically speaking, holds true. But the thing is, and you alluded to this in your introduction, is that the more we know and understand about tornadoes, we've been able to identify and designate additional areas that are adjacent to or outside of Tornado Alley that have a growing or higher frequency of tornadoes. So the question is, right, bottom line is, what do we know about Tornado Alley that has existed, and is it moving, changing, or shifting? And some of the data does suggest, yes, there may be some subtle shifts in what's going on. So I'll break it down this way. We have our traditional Tornado Alley that does include parts of the southern and central plains. But we have additional areas that we feel, scientifically speaking, that there's some migration eastward into what's known as Dixie Alley, which takes place in parts of Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, even Tennessee into Kentucky. And then maybe more so relevant to our area, something called Hoosier Alley, which includes eastern Illinois, Indiana, and parts of extreme western Ohio. So I'll just say that broadly speaking, we've just been able to identify areas that are adjacent to Tornado Alley that have a higher frequency. But secondly, there are some areas that are seeing a shift or frequency more eastward, and we could dive more into that as well.
Yeah, so that was the question. Why are we seeing this shift? And some say that, you know, this is some 400 or 500 miles further mm-hmm. east than what we historically think of as Tornado Alley. So why the migration?
Realistically, it's probably not that far. Now, there are some causes that are possible for this slight shift, and we really still, some of the science is very early on, and I'll caution you on that. We really don't have the clear answers yet. Some of it is the mechanics that go behind how these storm systems develop. One of the big triggers, specifically for tornadic activity, can be something called a dry line, which is a boundary that separates really humid air from the Gulf of Mexico mm-hmm. and really dry air from the high northern plain. That's a key trigger for some tornadic activity. And we've seen some signs with how the evolution of some of these storm systems have behaved over the past decade or two that that boundary layer or that boundary, that moist boundary has shifted east a little bit. So that has also resulted in, the potential eastward shift. I hesitate to say that it's been several hundred miles.
Okay.
Realistically, I think the data will probably come in. It will show that it's probably less than that. You know, and I'll bring up a second point as well, Chris, while we can we can talk about tornado numbers in general, and from a scientific perspective, we are identifying more tornadoes just due to technology. And I'll be honest, there isn't a tornado that happens in this country without about 100, you know, or 1,000 video right. cameras and cell phones
right.
to record it. That wasn't the case 50, 60 years ago. So we are recording and detecting every tornado now. So we have a better understanding of the distribution of these tornadoes just by pure detection of them as well.
And there have been some that have theorized that part of the movement of that dry line has been due to the extremely dry conditions that we've seen out west, the drought that we've seen further to the west. Is that also helping push this a little bit more eastward?
It very well could be, because that's a very important ingredient where we get that drier air aloft. It's called an elevated mixed layer, scientifically speaking. So, fluctuations, larger climate fluctuations out west, including longer term droughts, can impact that. Is climate and climate change potentially influencing this?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, really, at this point, Chris, I would say it's really hard to deny the fact that it's not impacting it in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll point this out with the tornado season in general. Not only is it shifting, it seems to be expanding as well. And mm-hmm. I'll give you a case in point. We have already, at this point, we are in early April, we have exceeded 20 tornadoes in the state of Ohio. That is our average, or over our average, for the entire
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And we are just into early April.
Right.
One more point that I'll make on this, too. The state of Wisconsin, back in February, saw its first recorded tornado ever in the state of Wisconsin in February.
Hmm.
And it wasn't a small tornado. It was an EF3 tornado in the month of February, in a state that typically is buried under feet of snow
right.
in the month of February in the middle of winter.
Right.
And not only did they record a tornado, a significant tornado. So
yeah.
hard to deny the fact that, you know, over time, yes, our climate is shifting and our tornado season is expanding.
Yeah, very, very unusual, and certainly will get your attention. And I guess the reason why I ask this is, and maybe the answer is the science is still out on this, you wonder,
right.
is this a permanent shift or is this something that is still considered an anomaly? I mean, we're still only talking about the past 30 years or so that we have seen
right.
A real significant shift from what I'm understanding from the science here.
And that's the million-dollar question as well, because, you know, our science really is only as good as the data goes back. And it only goes back really reliably to about the 1950s as far as tornado distribution.
Yeah.
So what will we know 20 years from now, 40 years from now, 100 years from now? It's really hard to tell. I'm excited to be part of the science that looks into that and tries to figure out the answer. Bottom line is, though, we're going to have to adapt to whatever changes in the climate that we see, whatever changes in extreme weather we have. So adaption is going to be a huge key to that. It's very difficult to tell where the future is going to go on that one, considering, you know, the understanding of where Tornado Alley is and if we're seeing any shifts of it and, you know, changes in our season. Still is so early in its infancy in understanding it. Where we go decades from now, it's just too difficult to tell.
I also thought that it was interesting in reading about this research. They note that we are also seeing more multiple tornado outbreaks than we used to. We've got storm systems that spawn multiple twisters instead of just one or two here and there. Are we talking about all the same reasons that are leading to that as well?
Yeah, similar reasons to that. And, you know, even the basic study of tornado genesis itself and how tornadoes develop, we know a lot about it, but we still don't know everything. Yeah. So how that, you know, plays into changes and factors of how our environment may be changing is a really complex and very deep question. But, you know, the more that we grow to learn and understand about this, you know, the better we'll be able to grasp that and answer those types of questions. So the science will eventually tell, and, you know, there are researchers, scientists that are working daily on that question. And we certainly hope to have clearer answers on that because, you know, we've gone a long way in saving lives. You know, Chris, I look back to, you know, we just recently had the anniversary of the super tornado outbreak of, right, you know, April 3rd and 4th of 1974. And those that have lived long enough, you'll never forget that. But we would like to say that we have better ways to warn and inform people.
Yeah, the bottom line is, and that was, you know, kind of the point in reading about some of this research, you know, making people aware that the bottom line is we may very well likely see more of these stronger storm outbreaks in the future. And it's significant because I know, again, in Tornado Alley, storm shelters are very common. We don't see right. those as much here, but we may right. in the future if this is the trend. And obviously, losses impact property insurance rates, so there are right. implications there. So it's just something to be aware of, to be cognizant of moving forward.
Absolutely, because, you know, it really matters when it comes down to, you know, life and property, especially when it talks about, you know, some of the most, you know, damaging or dangerous, you know, storms that exist on the face of the earth. Anything that we can do to kind of prevent and prepare people for that, mm-hmm. We will absolutely do that.
Again, WTOL 11 Chief Meteorologist Chris Vickers with us once again this morning. We've got a link to the research we're referencing on our webpage. It is really interesting stuff, worth a read. Chris, thanks very much for taking the time. Right. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on air this morning. Looking forward to talking to you guys soon.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Inmates at the Woodbourne Correctional Facility in New York State are suing the Department of Corrections after a mandatory lockdown they say will prevent them from seeing the solar eclipse. It's a mandatory lockdown for Monday afternoon for inmates at the Woodbourne Correctional Facility. And they are complaining, the inmates are, that they are going to miss the solar eclipse. In their lawsuit, the inmates said that the lockdown will prevent them from seeing the event in violation of their constitutional religious rights. They're suing on religious grounds. One of the inmates, Jeremy Zielinski, said the eclipse holds value to his atheist beliefs due to the celebration of science and reason. Other inmates who are part of this lawsuit include a Muslim, a Baptist, a Seventh-day Adventist, two who believe in Saturnalia, and another atheist. The solar eclipse will take place on Monday, won't be visible again until 2044, and we'll see how that... Well, they ought to get the opportunity to see it, too. I mean, just because you're incarcerated. Yeah. Wonder if that will get expedited in time for there to be a hearing over the weekend on that lawsuit. Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. A man allegedly pulled a gun on a Burger King employee in the Cleveland area because of the cost of his meal. But this is the twist to the story. It happened this past Sunday morning, Easter morning. The customer became upset because his meal was cheaper than he expected it to be. That's what made him upset. That's what set him off. The meal was cheaper than he expected. The employee tells local news reporters that the guy said, "My order can't be right. It should be like $11. And the employee said, they tried to explain that they had a promotion going on, and that's why it was cheaper. But he started cussing and getting all loud, and the employee was like, "Well, I don't know what to tell you. Why do you want to pay more money?" And it was at that point that the man sped away and then returned to the drive-thru window and threatened him with a gun. Because his meal was cheaper than he expected. He had a discount and he was not happy about it. Wow. I've never heard of such a thing. Somebody getting so upset because their meal was cheaper than they expected. That is crazy. Maybe the economists are right. We're just getting too used to inflation. I mean, we're getting too comfortable with prices constantly going up. And maybe this is evidence of that. We're so comfortable with prices going up that if it's too cheap, we think something must be wrong. Wow. Elsewhere in the broken news, this is something that's going viral. A California homeowner. And I'm not sure exactly where in California this is, just as California homeowner Omar Gabriel Munoz was expecting an Amazon delivery and got a notification on his phone from his Ring doorbell that the package had been delivered. It was a couple of phone chargers worth about $20. But when he got home, he did not see the package on his porch. And so he went back and looked at the video. And he found that, sure enough, a porch pirate had made off with the package, but not just any porch pirate. This was a person disguised as a walking black trash bag. Person disguised as a trash bag saunters up to the porch and grabs the package before scurrying away. Mr. Munoz said he was upset at first, but then started laughing at the absurdity of a walking trash bag making off with his phone chargers. Police have no suspects in the case. Apparently it was a pretty effective disguise. But Mr. Munoz says, if nothing else, he would like to meet the porch pirate and shake his hand for his ingenuity in his unique costume. You can laugh about it because it was only a couple of phone chargers that got swiped, but that's definitely an unusual costume. Speaking of unusual thefts, in North Platte, Nebraska, Jody Brummels has been sentenced this week in Lincoln County District Court to up to 120 days in jail for stealing a deep freezer full of meat. It stole a deep freezer full of meat. Mr. Brummels was arrested in August of last year after a woman called 911 after spotting a pickup leaving her home with her deep freezer in the bed of the truck. Full of a side of beef she had just bought. Of all of the strange... Well, you know, again, inflation. Things are costing more these days. People resorting to stealing people's meat. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news, a very atypical day for the Pleasanton, California Police Department after a man walked into the station with three hand grenades that he had found in his garage. Walks into the police station with three hand grenades. What the man didn't know, according to the police report, was that the grenades were actually live grenades. Officers called the Alameda County Sheriff's Office bomb squad to come in and take care of the grenades. They removed them and safely disposed of them someplace else. The Pleasanton Police Department advises anyone who finds potentially dangerous ordnance not to touch any explosives they find, and to notify police, and please, please, for the love of everything good, do not bring them to the police station. You happen to come across some grenades, don't bring them to the police station. We don't want them here either. And finally, in the broken news this morning, now, I think anyone with kids has told them the story, kids or grandkids, you've told them the story about how you used to walk to school 7 miles to, you know, you used to walk 7 miles to school each day, uphill both ways, probably in the snow year round. But how many of us actually did that? Well, one Arkansas mother allegedly made her 7-year-old son walk 8 miles to school after the kid kept waking up late and missing the bus. Amber Nicole Thompson, age 33, told police that she had sent the boy to sleep without dinner the night before. So talk about another parental, what is that, myth or, you know, old wives' tale. You just send you to sleep without any dinner. Well, she actually did send him to sleep without any dinner because he had gotten distracted and not done his homework. She told him he would have to set his own alarm to wake himself up to school because she wasn't going to. And when he missed the bus, she told him to walk 8 miles. The boy asked a farm shop owner for help on his way to school, which is when police were called in. Ms. Thompson, charged with endangering the welfare of a child, and she is no longer up for Mother of the Year, to be sure, but now this kid eventually will actually have a story to tell about the time he had to walk 8 miles to school. Fortunately, the kid's okay and all of that. I had to walk 8 miles to school when I was a kid. Yeah, sure you did. No, really, I did. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Get the ins and outs of sports gambling strategies each weekend on WFIN. On the Money provides you with the best bets and analysis so you're ready for all the action. Join Dave Biddle and Scotty Vegas for information on betting lines as well as a fair share of predictions. With a rapid rise in sports betting interest around the country, you won't want to miss On the Money, Sunday mornings at 10 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. If you have kids, do their lack of table manners bother you? I mean, you just had you know, Easter, and maybe you had a big family gathering, big Easter dinner, formal dinner. And, you know, have you ever been embarrassed by your kids' lack of table manners? Well, a new survey finds that over half of Gen Zers, these are young adults between the ages of 18 to 24, 77%, over half don't see the importance of table etiquette at all. 77%, for example, didn't care if someone had their elbows on the table. I remember when I was a kid, that was the thing, get your elbows off the table. 77% said that they don't care. 60% cared even less about how someone holds their silverware. Kind of interesting. And it's not just Gen Zers. I don't mean to just pick on Generation Z. In the survey, 32% of people from all age groups did not consider table manners as important. So maybe we should set a better example for our kids to follow, because over half of other diners said that they are indeed bothered by the lack of table manners around them. If you've ever wondered if this does bother other people at the table, yeah, over half said that that does bother them. And 49%, here's something noteworthy, 49% said that they would not date someone with poor table manners. So worth brushing up on your etiquette at dinner time there. As is traditional, to finish up the week, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, just kind of a random collection.
Yes.
There's no specific theme, no eclipse theme, or anything like that.
I didn't think. What would you do for an eclipse for food?
I don't know.
I have seen a dirty margarita.
Yeah.
So, seen that type of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
like the eclipse,
where everything's dark. Just burn this food and you'll be good.
Yeah. It'll be blackened.
It'll be blackened.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Actually, the dessert recipe does have a bit of a
darker
eclipse.
Because of the Oreos.
Yeah.
And yeah. There you go. Hey, I had one and I didn't even know
it. So, there we go.
And then just burn the rest and you're good to go.
Have a recipe. This morning, easy recipes for your family, starting with a chicken and garlic Parmesan rice recipe.
Yes. Mm. So 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1/2 cup of butter, 1 pound of chicken tenders, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, salt and pepper to taste, 1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes. Those are optional. If you don't like heat, then don't put them in, even though that doesn't give a whole lot of heat. 1 1/2.
Just a little zing.
Yeah. Yeah. 1 1/2 cups of white rice uncooked, 1/2 cup of dry white wine, such as a Pinot Grigio. Drier wine, 1/2 cup of Parmesan cheese shredded, and 3 cups of chicken broth. So in a large skillet, heat the olive oil over medium heat. In the meantime, season the chicken with salt and pepper and the garlic powder. Place the chicken into the skillet and sear until browned and completely cooked. Set aside when done. Then in the same skillet, place your butter, garlic, and pepper flakes. Saute that over medium heat just for a few minutes. Adjust the heat to medium high, then pour in your white rice. You're going to cook that for approximately 5 minutes. That kind of browns up your rice a little bit and gives it kind of a little bit of a different taste.
It's kind of like a fried rice.
Yeah. I don't know that it's really a fried rice. It's just, it just kind of gives it more of that butter taste.
Okay.
And stir that constantly, because if you don't, then it will burn. So, hey, there you go. There's your burn right there. So,
well, and there's more to the recipe here.
Yes.
But you know, you're talking about searing the chicken.
Right.
Wonder if you do blackened chicken.
Yeah, you could.
You do that.
There you
with
make
this.
That your eclipse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your blackened chicken.
I was just wondering if you blacken it rather than just searing it. You might try that.
Anyway, yeah, I think it tastes good. So then reserve 3 tables. So then you're going to, I've lost my place. Stirring constantly. Yeah, I did. I lost my place completely.
Yeah, 3 tablespoons.
Yeah, reserve 3 tablespoons of your pan sauce for later. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't put then pour in your white wine vinegar.
Yeah.
Approximately for 5 minutes, stirring constantly. Reduce for your 3 tablespoons. Add the rice to the remaining butter sauce. Stir well. Then pour in your chicken broth and season with salt and pepper. Bring everything to a low boil. Once boiling, adjust the heat to medium-low. Put your lid on to simmer for about 20 minutes or until the rice is tender. Then sprinkle with your Parmesan. Place your chicken on top. Replace the lid and let your chicken kind of warm back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Allow it to stand for about 5 minutes or so. And then before serving, drizzle that reserved pan sauce. Kind of drizzle that on top and then enjoy.
All right. The chicken with garlic Parmesan rice recipe.
Yes.
To go along with that, have a recipe for sautéed mushrooms.
Yes. This
Some
is
shrooms.
Good
and when do you find the shrooms in, you know, darkened environments,
there
right?
There you go. In there cloud, you go. See, I did good.
So,
and
so
I did
there you
good
go. Yeah, it's kind of an eclipse sort of thing.
There you go.
Sort of, in a roundabout kind of way. Sauteed mushrooms.
Yes.
How are we doing this?
I love sauteed mushrooms. One of my favorites. So 2 pounds of white button mushrooms cleaned, 4 tablespoons of butter, 1 teaspoon of sweet and smoky seasoning, 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, and salt and pepper to taste. So to a large skillet over medium heat, add your butter. Once the butter is melted, add your garlic seasoning and your mushrooms. Stir to combine. Stir occasionally for about 20 to 25 minutes until the mushrooms are tender. They'll have a nice golden brown look to them, and then they're ready.
That's
done.
It. Simple as that.
Yes, it's so good.
Sauteed mushrooms with the chicken and garlic parmesan rice. And then for dessert, it is an Oreo cream pie.
Yes, my favorite. Oreos, love Oreos. So 25 Oreo cookies and 5 tablespoons of butter. That is for your crust. And then for your filling, you have an 8-ounce block of cream cheese, 3/4 cups of powdered sugar, 2 cups of whipped topping thawed, and 10 Oreo cookies chopped up. So your first 25 cookies you are going to crush either in a food processor, or if you don't have a food processor, just put them in a baggie and pound them with a rolling pin.
Yeah. And that's filling and everything, right?
Right. Filling and everything.
Filling and everything. All right.
Why would you not?
I'm just saying.
Yes. Yes. Well, I guess if you didn't want to, if you want to eat the filling out of 25 cookies, you could do that too. Hey, I would do that.
No judgment. No judgment here.
No judgment here. I love that. So, or place them in a bag and bash with a rolling pin. Mix the crushed cookies with your melted butter. Press into the bottom and up the sides of a 9-inch pie plate. Place it in the fridge while you're making your filling. In a large bowl, beat your cream cheese, your powdered sugar together until soft. Fold in your whipped topping, followed by your chopped Oreo cookies. Spoon the filling into the pie crust, then smooth the top. Place in the fridge to chill for at least an hour before serving, if you can wait that long, and enjoy.
Yes, exactly. That would be the key. The most difficult part of the recipe is waiting to dive in.
An hour to eat. Yum.
The chicken with, well, you do the cream pie first. You put that in the fridge while you're doing your other stuff.
And then you're good to go.
Then you are good to go.
You eat your supper and you can enjoy your pie.
Exactly. Chicken with garlic parmesan rice, the sauteed mushrooms, and the Oreo cream pie. Yes. Those recipes are posted at the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook is where you find that. We've got a link up at goodmornings.net as well. And again, if you have a recipe that you would like to share, or if you take one of these recipes and do something different with it, add to it, or change it or customize it, we'd love to hear about that too. Again, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, or go to goodmornings.net for the link for those recipes.
Yep.
My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday, it's our special Eclipse Day edition of Good Mornings as we take you through the final countdown to this once-in-a-lifetime event. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.